Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home. Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch. The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed. And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Be childhood friends, and I might drive you around the bend, but I'm sure it's crazy kids, so I'd get out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
Hello everybody, we're having the big show, and it's me, Jack, and who else is here?
Me, Tanner Greenring.
Anybody else here?
Well, hey, it's me, Marissa Flaxbart.
Well, well, well. Ooh. Look who came crawling back.
Oh, well, I was thinking last night how, oh, man, we'll catch up. We'll say, oh, I haven't seen you guys since before there was a global pandemic. But we definitely recorded episodes of each other's podcasts in 2021. So it's just one of those time things, you know?
I have fond memories
of it. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It was a landmark. It's a beacon in a stormy time for me.
Yeah. Two beacons, even.
I was so surprised and delighted to get an email from Marissa Flaxbart. I promptly ignored it, and that's not on you. I just know that Jack is also CC'd, and I thought he'll take care of business. It's kind of his role. He's the businessman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like you guys had a lot of lovely correspondence.
Yeah, quite a bit.
It was nice. Yeah, back and forth.
Mostly.
And then I finally dipped in.
Whether you would respond to confirm a date or not.
And then I dipped in. Once you guys had landed on one, I thought, perfect. That's the night of my sister's wedding. I am officiating the wedding. So that's going to be tough.
But you didn't share that for a while. You sat on it like a lovely little morsel for a while until we were right up on the edge of it. And you're like, now is my time to pounce.
Now here we are 2 weeks later, and the wedding is done. My sister's still married.
Great.
Lasted longer than Kim K and whatever that guy's name was.
Talk about happily ever after. That's great.
Right?
Yes.
Wow.
Chris Humphreys, topical.
So anyway,
I'm an impressive poll.
I'm aware that now I've been, the ball is in my court. So I finally get caught up on all the details, and I'm delighted to see that we're recording today, October 28th, and Marissa has come to us with a suggestion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorites, Rogue One. Definitely like my favorite prequel
I see what's happening.
Canon Star Wars movie.
It's the one thing about Star
Maybe
Wars.
Maybe my favorite Star Wars movie. I don't know.
That you and I agree on, Tanner. It's the one thing you and I agree on Star Wars. We both like Star Wars a lot, but we have extremely divergent opinions. But I think you and I both agree to set aside our differences when it comes to the novel that Marissa has chosen for us today, Rogue One, the best Star Wars movie that's not.
Like prequel. Star Wars, like prequel.
Yeah.
Beautiful,
and the
great
whole time
movie.
You're like,
tragic.
I really like this. I'm really enjoying this book. But the weird thing is, why are none of these characters in any of the later movies? And then you realize why.
Yeah. I was surprised as well.
Yeah.
And there's not
also
a lot of spaceships in it.
There's not a lot of romance. Which maybe you don't know what the show's about.
Yeah.
It's subtextual. Subtextual romance.
Yeah,
if you're reading it right, you can find romance anywhere.
I don't mind, and you can pick up on a lot of the romance stuff. I assumed you were suggesting it because Andor just came out on Disney Plus too.
Yeah,
it's
good
kind of tied in.
I'm glad you brought it.
And I think you can pick up on a lot more of the romance subplots on Andor. Right, I'm really excited to talk about the movie.
Well, let's
get into it.
We'll dive into it. This week we're reading a novel. We're discussing a novel that Marissa suggested to us called A Rogue of One's Own. Rogue One for short.
Rogue One.
Yeah.
Rogue One for short, yeah. Did everybody know that that's what Rogue One was short for? A Rogue of One's Own?
I assumed it was like a typo or like maybe that was like the official title of the movie. Yeah. I didn't get it.
I think it's the novelization, but it's a lot different. It's worth experiencing both. Media, because they take really different directions.
Yeah.
One entire additional cat more in this book than in the...
Pivotal cat.
Yeah, film. I was going to say that Tanner, you and Marissa have something in common now, which is that you both enjoy making me read cat murder media, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's something you both quite like, isn't it? Is making...
Have I made you read cat murder media? I made you watch...
Maybe watch the cat murder movie, the famous cat murder movie. What's it called?
That's not how I remember it. Lady Has Sex with a Fish Man.
Lady Has Sex with a Fish Man is a famous... Folks, to who haven't been caught up, there's an Oscar-winning film in 2015, something like that, called Lady Has Sex with a Fish Man that Tanner made me watch. And I was like, I heard the title. I was like, sign me up. It turns out it's a cat murder movie. It's mostly about murdering
mostly
a cat.
About eating cats, yeah.
And similarly, this novelization of Rogue One... It does have some nice cats in it, and only some of the cats are murdered in the movie.
Not to be that name-dropping, you know, high-rolling podcaster guest, but I did recently get a chance to virtually meet the actor who plays Sexy Fishman in said film, and he was a delight.
How lovely.
A very kind man.
He plays all the skinny guys and all the things, right?
Yeah, and especially Guillermo del Toro things. Really, Guillermo del Toro was like, this is my man. I really want to apologize to you, Jack, about the cat murder. Now, while I can't take personal responsibility for the cat murder, I think that what happened is that I repressed it in my subconscious. Because there is a cat. There's a cute sort of, like, clip art cat, purple cat on the cover of this book. And the cat is an important part of the plot, even.
Very
it's like a surprise Chekhov's cat plot device. Mm-hmm. So I totally forgot about all the cat murder that is a very, very chilling.
I do think people should read this because it's a fun book. It's not mostly about cat murder, I should say.
It's largely about cat murder, actually. It's pretty, like, instrumental to the whole thing.
Because what makes you think, boy, this guy is a bad guy?
It wouldn't be a romance novel.
Oh, and it turns Tristan into such a tender soul, too.
Yeah. So we should say about the book, I think. It does have mostly nice cats in it who are fine and are kind of used as a very elegant and sweet plot device. And I did cry at when the plot device with the cat was revealed, and it was nice.
Yeah, and like prize show cats.
Yeah, they're prize show cats. It's a novel called A Rogue of One's Own by Evie Dunmore. It is fun and funny. It's the second
and/or sequel, I guess.
Yeah,
it's second. Second in the Andor sort of lineup.
Yeah.
It's just a letter away from being able to remix into Andor being in the author's name.
Oh, yeah.
Darn it.
Yeah, I'm sure she
If only her name
that.
Was A.V. Dunmore, then it would be in there. But
Marissa, quick question. Did you read the first one?
I did read the first one, yes.
Is it about the her friend, the Duchess? And
it is indeed so. And in that book, the first book is about Lucy Tedbury's friend, the Duchess. And in that book, Tristan Ballantyne comes up, and he's kind of scary. He's like, he's so roguish that he people warn her friend from the first book not to be seen with him because it will ruin her reputation. So he has a big now we get a chance to see what he's really like, and you learn there's more to a person. You know, everybody's got their own things going on. You're more than your reputation.
If there's one thing I've learned from my time in the romance mines, it is that a rogue is not a rogue, usually.
No. I also think Evie Dunmore must have forgotten about that, because now he has trading cards in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, cool. He's like a teen bot model. What do you call those?
Teen
bot model. No, that's what it is. Yeah. We should say the
it's
book.
Like a cover boy.
A cover boy, yeah.
Should we say, what do we do now? It was kind of, we're in limbo a little bit about how we say the book. Yeah.
And I'm excited, too, to know that you guys maybe have had a refresher in how the book ones work. Because I am a big fan of Strange Bedfellows. I did have been listening all along. I realized how the book ones work.
How we do the books.
Well, we do the plot. I guess last time we did... What, 30 seconds each for a 90-second total plot?
Yeah, I think we did.
And it's like a baton pass, so we don't stop the clock.
Yeah.
Oh.
So there's no messing around.
Beautiful corpse. Exquisite corpse.
Exquisite corpse.
Okay, so we're going to do 30 seconds.
Because this is a book. It's long.
I think that Marissa is going to do the best job. So does anyone know anything about relays? Is it best to have your best person in the middle?
Think so.
Okay. All right. So I'll go last. That's going to be bad. I'm going to do a pretty bad job. But we'll see. If you can get me there, we'll do it that way. 30 seconds from Tanner, 30 seconds from Marissa, 30 seconds from Jack. We're going to get this whole thing out. Do you want me to time it?
Yes. Yeah, please. And you have to signal us on the baton pass.
Okay, yeah. Tanner, I would like for you to begin now.
Okay. So there's sort of a preface.
10 seconds have passed.
Jesus. So we're on the planet Lamu. Galen Erso's there with his family. Commander Krennic arrives and says, like, we need your help completing the Death Star. And he said, no, I'm, like, retired. And then he kills his wife and his daughter, young daughter, Jyn Erso, flees.
Commander Krennic. So we have. I really want to yes and you here, but I feel my seconds ticking away. And there's a man,
like,
and a woman, and
the
they
track.
Both own a printing press. The woman is Lucy, and she is a suffragist, and her family hates that she's a suffragist. So she's a lady, but she lives in a sort of, like, reckless way. And she has to share this printing press with a rogue who used to tease her as a kid, but he secretly always had a crush on her.
Okay, you guys, I really wasn't, as the weakest runner on the team, I wasn't expecting the comedy of errors that happened. Tanner started off running in the wrong direction.
You've got the baton, Jack.
I haven't started the timer yet.
Oh, all the power, right, because you're the timekeeper.
There's a rogue, but he's not as roguish as he seems. He's always liked her since he was a little boy, and he buys half of the stake in the printing press, and he tries. He
covered.
Helps her. He makes an offer to her to what
the
if they have sexual relations in
I
exchange for he'll give her shares to the printing press. She eventually agrees, but he's not so roguish as that. He
didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it, but when it turns out that she is lustful for him, they do have relations. But then his mean daddy is making him be engaged to somebody, and that's all the time.
Get to the database on Scarif.
Oh yeah, and then everyone blows up.
They blow them up. Yeah,
they do get
the plans out for the Death Star.
Yeah, they do get the plans out. So it's sort of happily ever after in terms of the plans go out for the Death Star.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Rochester is like Tristan's dad, and he keeps the plans for the Death Star in this big tapestry that
there
he has
go.
Hung
Jesus.
On his wall.
You're just coming up with this?
Tristan comes in and he's like, your Death Star, I'm going to poke at this hole, the one hole in the whole tapestry. I'm going to poke my penknife or something into the hole, and it's going to unravel, and you care more about these plans than you do about all the citizens of, I don't know, Alderaan.
Scarif.
Yeah. Alderaan is later. Yeah.
So the fun thing about this novel, and I assume series of novels, is that it is tied into the suffragist movement. And what's her name?
Lucy.
Lucy Tedbury?
Lucy Tedbury, the termagant of Tedbury, our heroine, is conflicted by her two desires in life, which is one, to be an activist and advance the cause of the women's movement, and two, to be pretty horny for this rogue. And who's going to win? And can she do both? And I think the answer is probably both is fine.
Yeah.
She really struggles with it, though.
Yeah.
She doesn't think it's possible. Or eventually it's like she's actually worried, ultimately, what if I'm so horny for you that I don't care about women's rights anymore?
Yeah, that's,
you know,
happened to me. You know,
did it? Oh, speak on that, Tanner.
It happens.
It can happen.
Yeah, no, she's specifically really excited about something called the or excited is a weird way to put it, but the Married Women's Property Act. So this book is like a stealth delivery vehicle for information about how shitty it was to be married for a long time I don't know, the Commonwealth or whatever, probably everywhere. And how women were, when you got married, essentially you became, you know, all of everything that you had and that you were was tied into your husband and his ownership. And so Lucy and her buddies, and throughout this series, which is creatively named A League of Extraordinary Women.
Oh, good.
Whoa.
Whoa, that turned that right on its fucking head.
Do they have the same powers as the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Listen, you, like I said before, if you read it right, you can find whatever subtext you need. I mean, you guys know this. I don't have to tell
you
that.
Yeah.
It seems like Lucy's power is Well, she has steel eyes or something, right? Doesn't she have,
oh, that's
like,
cool. Like Colossus, but like very limited.
That's in there. I didn't mark the page, I'm afraid. But I brought you guys this book. I thought that it would be fun to have a cat book. So again, sorry about the cat death. And
I loved it. I should say, I was razzing you about the cat death. I was upset when, it turns out, in the past, the mean daddy, and there's always a mean daddy in these books, but the mean daddy who made the rogue be a rogue and retreat into his roguishness instead of just being the nice man that he is really inside him all along, when he was a little boy, did drown his cat. And it's only briefly mentioned, and most of it's nice cat stuff.
Right. So yeah. How perfect is that? But it also falls into the category of like almost only kind of genre of romance novels that I personally read, which is central Regency, first of all, and mm-hmm. secondly, a central character that is like so audaciously progressive that nobody else in the, like she that she's like an outcast in society.
Oh yeah.
And somehow finds the like one man in all of her, you know, county that is also like eventually willing to be on her wavelength in terms of the idea that women's rights are cool.
It's funny. It's like he's not like the character himself is like maybe never really thought that much about women's rights, but he's like such a kind of like such a revolutionary in his like attitude towards society that when she like shows him some literature, he's like, yeah, cool, I'm down with this like counterculture shit. Like, fuck yeah.
Right. And I think it is actually, I mean, not to get too earnest here, but I think it is actually pretty well supported by his whole relationship with his mother, who kind of like, you know, lost her faculties a little bit after his brother, who is the firstborn, died. So this is one of these Regency romances where the secondborn son, you know, of the whole, the spare son is suddenly...
He's got to step up and take the inheritance.
He's got to step up. And so his dad is all, you know, hot to trot about him providing an heir to continue the Rochester line. And meanwhile, his mom is really mistreated by his dad. So, like, he's got the woman that he cares most about in his life is subjugated by his father, who he hates in the very way that Lucy is so concerned about with other women.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And Mean Daddy isn't just a cat murderer. Sorry to keep bringing it up. I feel like I've said it more than it's in the book, but it really did stick with me. He is using the infirm mom who he's kind of kept locked away in a, you know, a rest home as leverage to make the rogue do, like, marry some, you know, society lady instead of do what he wants, which is to be a rogue. But in fact, what it really is, it turns out, is to marry his, you know, the girl he's loved since he was a little boy, who's this suffragette. She's cool.
Should we, and I say this with deep regret.
Okay. Yeah.
But since we're talking about Tristan
Valentine.
Yeah, because they make
it's like
they
Valentine
have cards
with
of him.
A B. So they,
like all the ladies are in love with him, the society ladies, and they make Valentine's cards.
And several gentlemen, including Oscar
Arthur?
Wilde.
We have to talk about
Oscar
that at
Wilde
some point.
Too, yeah.
I don't want to derail you, but we have to talk about why.
Sorry,
the
yes,
fuck
and I'm
Oscar
derailing
Wilde
myself
is
because the issue at hand is Valentine.
Yeah.
And while we're here, while we're talking about him, while we're talking about his past,
it gives us no pleasure to do
intimate
this.
Details.
Yeah.
You know, we are Bingus Butchers.
Yeah.
Cold.
Yep.
Passionless.
Yep.
And it is our duty, our obligation to sort of root out.
Yeah. How long that dong?
Sort of, yeah, how long that dong?
Yeah.
The girth. Yeah, I need to check the girth.
It's a segment that we like to call. Girth check.
Did you all find any evidence with which to base your estimations on? Because it's occurring to me that while this is quite a sexy book, there's not a lot of Bingus content.
Yeah, that's a technical
there's
term.
A little... I got an sort of inference to the size.
Yeah, I got some too.
But I definitely got a strong signal on the iridescence.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Okay, so you and I have captured separate passages. So I think this is going to be kind of, if you'll excuse the phrase, a meaty segment.
Okay.
And we take no pleasure in this.
And we take no pleasure in this.
Marissa,
and it's not something we ever...
Not.
We're not casting judgment, you know?
Yeah.
But it must be done, you know? I have little to contribute here, but I do have my book. So if you want me to read anything, I'm happy to provide that service.
This is an early chapter. They're sort of like before they've realized that they're in love, Lucy and Tristan. They're kind of having a little bit of... They're rivals. Mm-hmm. He's sort of this rakish playboy, and she's like a suffragette. Not that those two things are opposite, necessarily. They are in this book.
He's interested in doing it, and she's interested in doing the work. That's nice.
I suppose... So this is what she says to him. And again, I take no pleasure in this. I suppose where the chase is the aim, names are but tedious details. And he says, I wouldn't know. He sounded bemused. I never chase. What a worrying degree of self-delusion. He tutted. Have you not read your Darwin? The male flaunts himself. The female chooses. It has ever been thus. Beware the determinedly chasing male. He is hoping that you won't notice his plumage is subpar.
Okay, that's interesting.
Whereas yours is, of course, superiorly large and iridescent. And he says, I assure you it is not iridescent.
Okay.
So sort of confirmed by implication, large. Fine. It's like a romance book hero.
Yeah.
He's going to have a huge dong. They always do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But rarely iridescent.
Rarely iridescent. It sounds like we've not gotten like lucky here tonight. We haven't pulled like a shiny out of the pack of Dick trading cards.
We haven't caught them all yet, right?
So it's large and not iridescent. So
large and not iridescent. That's so it's a little disappointing. You think you're going to get like close when you hear like, oh, we're talking about iridescence.
No, that was one of the moments where sort of she set me up for something.
That I can market. That I can sell. I'm just a Bingus Butcher.
Yeah.
I'm not here to pass judgment.
You're not going to sell any Binguses when you have a big sign that says not shiny.
Yeah.
May I read the passage that I pulled as well?
Please.
Please.
So I thought we could... I don't know whether this is within our purview as Bingus Butchers. And Tanner, you can tell me. But I feel like there's an opportunity for us to expand a little further in this realm. The other passage where they referred...
I'm interested.
...to how long that dong in the book is the following.
This is like
one.
Shark Tank?
Yeah.
What's your pitch?
Heat poured through her. Her breathing was the loudest sound in the room. She was touching a man's part. An astoundingly hard, hot, and heavy part that briefly made her wonder, how? How would it work? So, I was thinking we could go to WebMD.
Interesting. Yes. Perfect. And I think we will just sort of like preemptively get a second opinion because I will also go to WebMD.
And you know, we're Bingus Butchers and that's, in fact, in some ways this isn't in our purview, but when we hear something that sounds like it might be somebody having a medical emergency of some kind, we're not going to just like let them die in the street.
When I was in college,
you're
going to love this story, Jack. When I was in college, a friend of mine worked at Whole Foods as a butcher.
Perfect.
And one time he was butchering into a cow's leg and a putrid smell came out of the leg that made him throw up all over the place.
Lovely.
And it turns out that the like bone had rotted inside of the cow's leg.
Great.
And just or a pig's leg and just like festered in there and it was full of like disgusting rot.
What a great story.
And that is what we're trying to prevent, and that's what we're here to do. Right. As two Bingus Butchers, we don't want to. We're not here to like pass
along.
You guys
finding
bad...
a lot of bones in there when you're doing your work with the axe. Those bones sometimes in there.
It's our responsibility.
Really, it happens
to root out some of this stuff.
So I'm on the WebMD symptom checker here. And so, do we have a sense of his age, Marissa? Maybe you can help us. They say her age. I think we get a sense.
Like sort of mid-30s.
I felt like that he's in his, like, maybe early 30s.
Because I think she's something like 29. And
she's an old maid.
A few years older than her. So, I would say early 30s.
Let's say 31, male. Okay. And so the main symptom, what type of your main symptom? I think, let me just go back to the passage. Astoundingly hard. So I'm going to put astoundingly hard in
stiffness
here.
Stiffness is what I'm going to put.
Okay.
This is why we're two different doctors, you know.
Okay. Yeah, we're two different.
A second opinion. Yeah.
Shall I say joints feel hard or harder to see?
The joints would be hard to see.
Oh, hard lump in joint. I think that's what that is. That's what.
Does she go into any further detail? Because my options are neck stiffness, shoulder stiffness, wrist stiffness, or morning stiffness.
Oh, morning stiffness for sure. It's in the wee hours of the morning. Okay. So hot.
Fever.
So I'm just going to say, do you want to say hot flashes?
Sure.
That's what it sounded like. It seemed like it might have come and passed pretty quickly.
Okay. So I'm going to put hot flashes in here. And then heavy, heavy part.
Okay.
So I'm going to say heavy.
Groin feels heavy is an option for me. So I'm just going to do that.
Okay. I'm going to put heaviness. Feeling of heaviness and groin.
I didn't know I had to go to the doctor for that.
I think if past this prologue, when we plug groin heaviness into WebMD, they always think it's a hernia. So I'm pretty worried about this guy. All right,
well,
so I've
maybe
got
it is.
Feeling of heaviness in groin, and we're ready to move on to see what he's got here. And they've got, worryingly, Tanner, I don't know if this is true on your page, but they've got a picture of this guy, and he doesn't have a bingus at all.
Uh-oh. It's
well,
been butchered.
I don't think we're
going to
get a very accurate diagnosis then.
I'm worried about this doctor now.
Mine won't continue.
Why won't it?
What is snuff?
I'm going to put, and then snuff.
It's not in the pages. I'm just thinking, you know, he hangs out at those nightclubs.
We know.
Oh, probably like opium. He's probably in like opium dens.
I think there's some kind of sex parties that he has attended once
opium
or twice.
Tincture.
Who knows?
So I'm going to say his medications are alcohol, liquid, and opium tincture. Are you just not able to continue, Tanner?
Yeah, I just closed the tab.
Okay, so it's down to my
it's
doctor.
It's all on you.
And then
it
one
stumped
doctor's
us.
Bowed out.
Past or current conditions?
You're like House. Like, you're
I'm
the
house.
Doctor everyone turns to when no one else has the answers, you know?
It's never lupus.
It might be lupus
it
here.
Might be, this one might be lupus. So do we have any past or current conditions? We know that he was in the war. He was shot, wasn't he?
He's been beaten.
He was shot
by his father.
So flogging, I'm going to put in. No result for that.
Huh.
He was shot. I'm going to put shot in the war.
Which war? I don't know what war it would have been.
Wow, they're giving me a lot of results for this. But bleeding in the head? I'm going to put alcohol intoxication there, too, because it did come up somehow. Okay, I think we're ready.
War of 1812.
I didn't know that.
Really?
Okay.
Napoleonic Wars.
All right, are we ready to get our result?
Yeah.
I'm ready. I want to know how it would work.
Okay, we've got four possibilities here, and they're all pretty bad. So these are all a fair match. He could have whooping cough.
Aw.
He could have...
I don't think they were, like, inoculated against that at this point, so...
Sickle cell disease. He could be having a hemorrhage of some kind, and I think what is happening is that he's having a stroke.
Fun.
Yeah, it's
fun results.
It's a brain attack.
Not as much penis stuff as I was anticipating, and maybe mine would have gotten there. But he stumped medical science over here.
Well, I think it might be because of the figure in the first place, right? Yeah. If the little image didn't give you the option to click on the area.
Oh,
you
right.
Know, it was already
butchered. Did you, Jack, did you put not iridescent?
Oh, I forgot to put that. So maybe it's... I was going to say,
the
though,
only data point we had.
I do think that Evie Dunmore, if she were a responsible author... I loved this novel. I had a lot of fun with it, but I think she should have stopped the book at that point and just checked to make sure he was okay, because he's showing all the classic signs of a stroke.
I mean, fortunately for us, as Bingus Butchers, and I hate to be this cold about
it's
it,
not
but
a problem.
I don't think a stroke affects the quality of the meat at all.
That's nice.
So what we have on our hands is
It's large. It's not shiny.
A large, non-iridescent dibbingus.
Yeah. on that note.
And we're flipping our little sign on the butcher's door from...
Yeah, shop's closed, folks.
Yes, we're open to sorry we're closed. Hanging up our little hats.
On that note, I'd like to take a little break and come back and talk more about this scintillating novel. Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Tanner,
yes,
say something about the book.
Okay, I don't have access to any of my notes, and it's actually something I meant to resolve over break, but instead went upstairs and said goodnight to my son. Okay,
yeah.
Jack, let me go grab my other computer. It's right over here. I'll be right back. Banter,
okay,
please.
Perfect. All right, great. Marissa.
Oh, cool. We're doing this. Great.
Say something about the book.
I have so much to say,
okay,
and one
perfect.
Of the things
so
that I
nicer.
Wanted to... yeah, listen, I'm going to stay focused, and I'm going to tell you what I have to say, which yeah. is, one of the other reasons I thought you might really enjoy yeah. A Rogue One's Own is that it has a high poetry content.
Lots of poems.
Lots of poetry. There's new made-up poetry, and yeah. there's tons of, like, real...
Real-ass
you know,
poetry. There's a lot of Tennyson. Poetry. There's a lot of Wordsworth in there. And there's a beautiful poem by, I assume it must be Shelley, one of the Romantics, maybe one of the lesser Romantics, possibly
oh,
Byron.
Who you think of as a lesser Romantic.
I'm trying to think
professor.
Of that. So here's, we'll get to it together. I've briefly forgotten his name, but Byron said of him when he became poet laureate, he turned his coat and would have turned his skin, which is a pretty sick burn. Who was
oh,
Byron saying?
Like Yeats? Lizard people.
No, it begins with a C for sure. Southey. No, it was Southey. It was Southey. Southey. So that's a lesser romantic.
Southey with a C?
Southey with an S. It doesn't. I was thinking of Cooper. But listen, I'll read you the poem. It's beautiful. I don't know who it's by. It goes like this. Hark! Who hears the kitten's cry? So sweet, so soft, so yearning. She's lonely in the black of night, and those shadows so concerning. Her siblings gone, the bed so cold. Where is master to whom she's sold? Christ, the scansion on this is impossible. Oh, it's such a cruel fate to mew and shiver, fear and wait. But here comes young master after her demand. Her caress doth fear destroy. Cupped gently in her master's hand, the kitty purrs again with joy. It's really a cat-heavy book. And it's a lovely, yeah. beautiful poem. I thought we could spend a little bit of time kind of analyzing it. And, you know, I...
Sure.
Poetry corner. Perfect.
Yeah, this is
now, do we
corner.
Want to put this poem in the context of the story? Because it is rather droll.
It's rather droll, yes.
But the situation is that the author, at least, you know, diegetically in the book, the author of the poem is a cousin named Cecily.
Yes.
She, we don't know where the poem came from originally, of course. So the source might be
Southey.
Coleridge, Southey. Okay.
Yeah.
she presents this poem to Tristan, who she is trying and nearly succeeds in marrying, a kind of by force. It's complicated. It's an important part of the book. And the thing is, she tells him this poem over dinner because she's learned that he is, in fact, an amazing poet. The author of the famous anonymous poem book of poetry, some call it, A Pocket Full of Poems, yeah, which the ladies love.
Good name.
It's an important plot point that I think we neglected to mention in our otherwise comprehensive 96 down of this book. Otherwise,
and
flawless.
The last thing I'll say about it is that while it would have been very clever of Cecily to recite this pussy poem to her very experienced, in theory, would-be paramour, he's pretty sure that she's not in on her own joke. You know, he hears the poem and he's like, oh, that would be a dirty poem. I don't think she's aware that it's a dirty poem that she's written. It's just bad.
And it doesn't scan.
No, that's part of what he hates about it, I'm sure.
It's a sweet moment. Yeah.
He's kind of a freak, so he does things his own way, you know? That's what I'm proposing.
He is kind of a freak. Here's chapter 29.
Perfect.
When Tristan spotted the three bulging hemp bags at the center of her drawing room, he stopped dead in the doorway and whistled through his teeth.
Okay.
420 friendly.
That's great.
Three bulging bags of hemp? Wow. They are progressive.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say...
Sign me up.
I thought you were going
to
say
that... This is what the suffragette movement is about?
Yeah, this is the future liberals want. Mm-hmm.
This is the past liberals want. I was thinking you were going to say that because he was like wolf whistling at these bags, that he was horny for the bags.
Well, I mean, horny for smoking up all that sweet
hemp.
She
does say, toward the end of the book, she points out that he is attracted to older women, and he's basically like, listen... Men, we don't care.
As long as they're shaped
they
like a big bag of mail.
Tanner, if I
that's all I says. Care about.
That's exactly what he says. I just finished the book, and that is definitely what he says.
If I could borrow your gift for the artful segue.
Yeah.
Speaking of horny for the bags.
Yeah, please.
We have a little segment that we like to do on this show when we read romance novels. That is called Two Prude Dudes.
Yeah. We
it's my favorite.
We haven't done it in a while.
I know. I miss it. I miss it.
Horrified by the idea of Congress.
Hmm. Yeah, we're horrified by the idea of Congress. We like to read the books because they're full of poetry and...
cats.
Progressive politics and nice cats, and they're well written. And this one was
Rogues.
A really fun one. But then they go ahead and ruin it by putting smut in the books, don't they? So... Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
We're going to try to fix... There's actually not a lot of smut in this one. It's fairly low level. Smut as it goes, so folks who share those our prudish proclivities need not fear too much. But we are going to take one of the
it's
scenes
not explicit
that's described that I think is a little just goes a little bit too far, and we're just going to fix it up.
Too horny.
Yeah, it's too horny.
Let's hose it down.
We'll fix it up together. And Marissa, I hope you'll be an honorary prude dude, and it's three prude dudes. It doesn't quite have the same, you know, assonance, but
three.
It's fine. It's tough. We'll work
tweed.
On it. Three twee.
it's my solemn duty to crack this for us, you guys.
All right, no. Forget I said anything. Two prude dudes and also Marissa.
Yes, there we go. That's perfect. Two prude dudes and Marissa.
Two.
Tanner, please focus in.
You got me. Yeah, I'm here.
I'll read this passage that is, I think, too horny. We'll take out the horny parts. We'll put it back with something that'll work... Honestly, better. You don't need to put smut in your novel to make it good, and this will actually be better. And then we'll go from
there.
Yeah,
we're like Will Smith when he called out Eminem and said, actually, you can do rapping without swears.
Yeah, it turns out you can do rapping without swears, Will.
And Eminem definitely didn't get the last laugh on that with a famous line in his most popular song of all time.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, just stop me when it feels like it's going too far, and we'll fix it.
Okay.
Great.
His thighs were pinning her skirts to the settee.
What's that?
It's like
kind of
a
chair?
A divan.
I think thighs.
Understood.
Right from the start, thighs
feels
is
already
a
problem. Okay.
Certainly got me a little hot and bothered thinking about this guy's thighs.
Okay, should we pick another part of the body, or is that altogether too problematic? You know what is? You know what I have in the house is I've got one of those, like, it's like a plastic bug catcher.
Sure. Oh, you get really, they're sticky.
So you can stay away from the, no, like you hold it. It's like you squeeze it and it opens up and it catches.
Oh,
bug,
yeah, and you can like gently catch the bug.
It's a humane bug catcher.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he's and using then the bug catcher to sort of lightly press her skirts.
Yeah.
Onto a well, divan.
He said it says onto pin. Divan, yeah. So I was thinking we could
was
do
a
like
sexy
a
sexy for me as well. Yeah.
Maybe we could be like the people's elbow, you know, like what the Rock does.
So I want to try to consolidate our metaphors here, or like just like the tools that we're working with. Because if we got a bug catcher and we're also in a wrestling ring, let's
go bug catcher.
Let's close it in.
Right. Otherwise, I think we're at risk of circling back to it being sexy all over.
So
again,
let's just have it be a bug. His humane bug catcher was gently pinning the spider to the. Settee is fine, honestly. Or Devon. We'll say Devon.
Yeah, why? Yeah, Devon is a little clear.
I like Devon. Yeah.
Keeping her legs trapped, and that's what happens when you get a spider in the bug catcher, isn't it?
Sure, and it's traditional to refer to spiders as, you know, female. Charlotte, you know, other famous spiders.
One thinks of Black Widows, you know.
Love that.
She could bite him. That's fine.
The spider?
Yeah. But she could smell the arousal on him.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
How about bug spray?
Yes, but I think that's great.
I don't know if that's a problem yet. And I'm honestly maybe a little interested in seeing where it goes.
I got to say, okay. I'm going to veto.
This spider who's aroused by this man.
I like the bug spray.
Okay.
Well, it just kind of follows, right? Like the spider can't. She would bite him, but she could smell the sort of insect repellent.
You're not interested in it at
you know
all
what?
In exploring.
Here's what we can
like,
do. Here's what we can
maybe
do.
Maybe like a
I've got good
spider
news.
Man.
I'm King Solomon here. We can do both.
Okay.
I love it. I love that.
His humane bug catcher was spinning the female spider to the divan, keeping her legs trapped. She could bite him, but she could smell the bug spray on him and felt the heat of his urgency.
Perfect.
Yeah. And we get it both.
Yeah, she would.
And knew that the only thing stopping him now would be her asking him to stop. That wouldn't happen with a spider, but it's not too horny.
Well, no, because I think what comes next is she's not going to ask him to stop.
And the words did not come. Okay, yeah, which would happen.
I think
with a spider. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, with an angry moan, she slid her hand down the flat plane of his stomach. Uh-huh. What's a noise that a spider makes?
Like a chittering.
Chittering with a chitinous.
Ew. Little
scurrying,
yeah, and it wouldn't be hand.
Chitinous.
What does a spider got? You know, furry legs.
Mandibles.
Yeah, mandibles.
We can say furry legs. I think that's fine.
Okay.
Well, it depends on the spider.
True.
Frankly, and this is my fantasy, I'm thinking something a little more carapace-y.
What noise does a spider make? I just want to get it right here. It says a wolf spider produces a purring noise.
Ooh,
purring noise.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think it's less risque than moan. Although,
yeah, we can say chitinous purr, and that really takes the sexiness right out of it.
Yeah.
With a chitinous purr, she slid her. What are spider's legs called?
Yeah. What about the foot? Spider foot.
Yeah. Let's
spider foot.
Or we could just say tarsi.
You want me to Google what's a? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tarsi.
Okay, with a chitinous purr.
Let's get clinical. I think it's a good idea to get clinical.
That's good, yeah. She slid her tarsi down the flat plane of his stomach. That seems fine. I guess she's escaped the catcher at this point. Over the front of his trousers, that would happen.
I think he let her out. I think that's what we learned when
Yeah.
It's called the tarsus.
Yeah.
A spider's paw is called a tarsus. You were so close.
And found him hard. That worries me
because
it makes me think of penises. Honestly, I'm just going to say it.
Yeah. How about hard to what, you know?
Yeah, hard to climb.
Mount?
Is she going
Are they
up
still
or
like...
down?
Oh, two, what about what a spider suits they in web someone, don't they? Found him hard.
Hard to web.
Hard to in web.
And then you're like Shakespeare because you're inventing words too, which is cool.
I think that's going to work. He made a guttural sound. Is everyone okay with that? Do we want him to
do
a chitinous purr as well? He's maybe trying to communicate with her.
Oh, it's like first contact. Yeah, that's lovely.
He made his best effort at a chitinous purr. I want to make sure I've got chitinous right. I think it's a... It's just what... who's the guy who wrote Perdido Street Station?
Oh, R.L. Stein.
Perfect. Made of pertaining to or resembling chitin. Well, whatever. We're going with it.
Useful. Thank you. Dictionary. I think that we can, I'm happy to go along with him also attempting a chitinous purr if it's useful for the communication lines to be open. I do think that in the new context that we've created, a guttural noise is still, it's
still fun. Maybe that's just how he's trying to communicate. So we'll just say he attempted his own form of communication in the form of a guttural sound.
Okay.
And his weight crashed down on her.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Crowded her back into the upholstery. It makes me worry for the spider, but it's not too sexy. And that's
sounds like she's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a tussle. That seems fine. A heated tangling of tongues and fingers, which is not working for me.
The spider tongue.
Yeah, I don't think they're called fingers.
Well, should we say
patellae? Is the spider in his mouth?
The spider's in his mouth.
Is
yeah,
the spider
it would
in his
have
mouth?
To be.
Yeah, how good the spider's tongue? I mean, and that raises a new question, right? The spider's tongue
called?
Well, they say that most people are swallowing 5 spiders every day, and this is how it happens. It's just rarely described in a romance novel.
Right.
It was a tussle, so a heated tangling of tongues is probably fine, and if we just say patellae.
Pedipalps.
Pedipalps. That's perfect.
That's what a spider has instead of a tongue.
I love that.
Two pedipalps.
A heated tangling of pedipalps and patellae. And that's not sexy at all.
No, but it does have a nice rhythm to it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you would have to also add tongues and legs because there's a man involved too.
Oh, yeah.
And then is it too sexy?
But yeah, now that's getting a little too sexy.
Just the words tongues and legs next to each other. Yeah.
Read it back to me.
Okay. Well, this is all in my head, Tanner, but with a chitinous purr, she slid her tarsus down the flat plane of his stomach, over the front of his trousers, and found him hard to enweb. In his attempt to communicate with her, he made a guttural sound, and his weight crashed down on her, crowded her back into the upholstery. It was a tussle, a heated tangling of pedipalps and patellae, and tongues and toes. We could say tongues and toes. That's not too
tongues
sexy.
And toes is nice. It almost sounds like it's sort of playful then, and it kind of undercuts
that the alliteration
sexiness.
Undercuts the sexiness in a nice way. So pedipalps, patellae, tongues and toes. It's just a tussle.
Wow.
Yeah, dragging and heated off takes on a new meaning in this context.
Yeah.
Rather than like horned up, it's meaning, you know, angry.
Yeah.
I know we're doing a fun bit for our show.
Oh, okay.
But I think we've got a hot
got
property here.
Really beautiful. No, this is going to be IP.
Yeah.
Pedipalps
and patella.
Palpipads.
Tongues and toes. It's really, if we can get some more alliteration in here, I'll
that's
be really
a series,
happy.
Baby.
Yeah, that's the first two books in the series. Pedipalps and patellae, tongues and toes.
You think well, like, oh, it's about it like a guy having sex with all sorts of kinds of like different, or like someone having sex with all kinds of different
tussle.
Like bugs. No, yeah. It's about a spider having all sorts of kinds of different sex with other things.
I see.
Writes itself.
The tongues and the toes, what they're doing is that they are dragging off clothes and untying laces until fabric ripped and she wrenched away. I guess that's fine in the context.
I mean, it sort of sucks. He, like, ripped his...
Yeah, but that's okay. I think we can allow that. She gasped at the sight of the remnants of her chemise. That doesn't make sense because it's his... It doesn't... She's not wearing clothes.
No, but you know what spiders have that's a kind of silk-like? They've got those webs.
Okay. I think they molt, too.
So if she's working on in webbing this guy that she's hanging out with and it's not working out, you know, all that tussling might really rip some webs.
Webs, yeah.
Okay.
That's
she
what
gasped
I'm thinking.
At the sight of her tussle-ripped webs. That's beautiful.
Good.
Wow.
Torn like paper, clean from her collarbone to her navel. Just get some quick spider anatomy here. Clean from her chelicera to her spinneret.
Mm.
Ooh, that does sound kind of sexy still. But
it's a little bit sexy, but I think for poetic reasons we can allow it.
And also we're learning. You know?
Yeah, I know so much more about a spider's anatomy, which I guess is important to me now.
She glared at Tristan, panting, we'll just say purring chitinously, and I know that chitinously is not being used correctly now, but that's what's happening.
It's embarrassing.
You're the only one that knows, though.
Yeah. Get a hold on yourself.
Of or pertaining to chitin?
Yeah.
Right, that's the issue.
I think it can make a noise. I think it can make, that's what chitinously, I think to me chitinously is that like noise that bugs make when they're like crawling along with their chitin all over everything.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Chitin,
yeah,
is the shell of bugs.
Okay,
right?
So that's fine.
Yeah, we're good.
You're perfect.
Thank God.
You trust your instincts.
I know, I should. He gave her a thin smile. This is me having a hold on myself. That seems fine. All right, we're going
to... He said that to the spider?
We can have him say it to the spider if you think it'll kind of turn the heat down a little bit.
This a hold on myself?
This is me having a hold on myself. This seems fine.
Yeah, it's good.
His hands spread the ruined fabric, the webbing.
Yeah.
Exploding, exposing her, and it says breasts here, but I'm kind of don't want
I don't think spiders have those. Unless ours could. Although, I guess we're trying to make it less sexy.
I think abdomen is going to be the answer here.
Unless there's more spiders.
Okay.
So here's what I'm thinking. He's made some sort of gesture, and suddenly, behind whatever he's pulled aside,
there's more spiders.
Backups, you know, the infantry is here.
I love it. This is me having a hold on myself. His hands spread the ruined webbing, exposing
yet more spiders. Lay their eggs in webbing.
Yeah.
So it could just be your babies, like a whole, like millions of tiny baby spiders.
Yeah. Exposing millions of tiny baby spiders. And that's not sexy at all.
No, terrifying.
No.
Although.
Yeah.
Getting all mixed up here. I don't know.
Yeah. And speaking of R.L. Stein, now we're on Fear Street.
His head lowered. A rush of heat swept over the surface of her skin as her body arched up. That's what spiders do when they do that scary
thing.
Have you ever seen a spider that does that? It's really scary. She let her head fall back against the settee. There was no stopping either of them now. This is all fine. He was in the grip of something stronger and older than reason, fighting a spider. And she wanted...
Millions of spiders.
Spooky. This is sort of...
Yeah, it's getting
Poe. I'm getting Poe, you know? And not Poe from Dameron. Star Wars.
Older than reason.
I tried to beat you there, Tanner, and I didn't make it. I didn't make it. Not that Poe.
Quick
not
on the draw.
Well, listen, I know a thing or two.
All right, I'm going to try to wrap this up pretty soon. I have a lot more text, but let's try to bring the story to a close. She's back against the settee. There's no stopping either one of them now. Something in the grip of something older than reason, and she wanted one last time. One last time.
That sounds sort of like Lovecraftian. In the grips of something older than reason.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Like his mind is being flayed.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. It's not sexy at all.
It's not sexy. It's
God.
One
we
of
have
the
to do like very
things.
Little work. I think the master stroke of turning her into a spider, which I think was Marissa's fault.
Yeah, I think so.
Has like completely sanitized this entire passage.
That's one of the least sexy things I've ever read, but quite poetic.
Yeah.
And it works for
the
book.
And spooky.
Yeah. She offered no resistance when he shoved up her skirts. Come on, just adding smut back in when we've done all this careful work.
Yeah.
What do spiders wear?
Chitin.
Yeah, we've been over this, Jack.
It's chitin.
How about a carapace?
Do you want to say ruffled her carapace? Does that seem okay?
But why would
how about
she
push
offer
back
no
her spider babies? Because, like, he's trying to...
Yeah, let's get the spider
what
babies.
What are they doing?
In. She offered no resistance when he gently picked up... This is a humane removal of a spider.
And I want to be clear, because a minute ago you did say they were wrestling. But is he trying to have sex with the spider?
He's not. I think we can't have that, because that's the opposite of what we're trying.
Right.
Yeah. I think he's in a fight with the spider. The spider is in his mouth. The spider's trying to get him all tangled up in the web.
In the way that one gets into a fight with a spider when one is trying to humanely remove her from the house. Where the spider doesn't think that you have their best interests at heart. But
I'm just saying, I think there's probably a population of people who the story so far is not quite sanitized enough yet.
Sure.
In fact, I think by introducing the spider, you've maybe like...
Do you want me to just put a line in here? Because I'll do this whole thing at the end. Do you want me to put a line in here that at some point that it says he was not trying to have sex with the spider? Just throw
maybe
that
maybe we should
in.
Just state it now.
Yeah, well, okay,
where
so
are we
now
in
we'll
the,
say that.
Yeah.
She wanted one last time. One last time. He was not trying to have sex with the spider.
Okay, clear.
She offered no resistance when he gathered up her millions of spider babies.
Perfect.
She had taken a rogue into her web.
Perfect.
Into her life, so a mad last tumble and a ripped bodice was a befitting goodbye. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think it's mad lad is what they say.
What if she's tumbling out of the door?
There we go.
Of the room that he's in.
So a mad last tumble out into the garden or onto the veranda.
Yeah.
Was a befitting goodbye. And then
how about on to the Devon?
I'm just going to skip right to the end of the passage because it actually works for us here. Let me stay tonight, she said. Yeah. But he couldn't because, you know, you don't want to.
He's allergic.
In the house. He's allergic. The end.
To spiders?
Yeah. Beautiful.
That must be a thing, right?
And we'll just send that to Evie.
Yeah.
She can fix the book and then it'll be, and take the cat murder out of it, and it'll literally be a perfect novel.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll say, remember the time that they did the radio edit of that one Kid Rock song and it was actually better than the original Kid Rock song? This is like that. Hopefully she'll get it.
Folks, we have to go. I think you both captured burns. I didn't, so I will allow you to briefly state your burns.
I don't have one.
Okay. Marissa, you are the sole carrier of the torch of the burn. So this is our segment. It's called Burn of the Week.
She can write a great book.
She writes, yeah.
It's a bit of a spoiler for a twist.
Okay.
Toward the end of the book, where suddenly Lucy's estranged mother appears at her house, and she is the one who is trying to secret Tristan's mother out of the country. She needs to leave Britain post-haste, her mother said. However, I prefer for her to stay in the familiar climes of Europe. Her son's death has left her a little unwell. Any added stresses from living among, say, Americans would be her undoing.
That's good. I missed that.
It's a burn on America.
That's beautiful. Yes. A nice subtle burn. I feel like I should have caught that.
Yeah.
Lovely. It's a funny book. It's a fun book. We liked it. There's lots of nice cats in it. We won't, because we didn't get into it. The cat plays a really fun role in the novel, and it's worth
instrumental.
It's worth reading it just for that. I teared up a little bit. It's a lot like Men in Black. Folks, that's all the time we have for today. I would like to thank you, Tanner, for bearing with us this week.
You're welcome.
I would like to thank you, Marissa, for bearing with us this week.
Oh, it was my pleasure to bear with you.
I would like to thank the Bee Babies and the Bug Babies so very much for bearing with us and listening to our show. Everybody, please go subscribe to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/BSCCpodcast. Join our Facebook group. Everyone's having a nice time in there. It is Baby Nation on Facebook. And rate and review the show. Marissa.
Question.
Okay, yes.
Can I make a plug of my own?
Yes, please.
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
We'll take a vote. Paper, rock, scissors?
It is not.
No, I guess go ahead.
It's not going to be a plug for Sweet Valley Diaries, although the mission continues slowly but surely. I have, since we last spoke, become a professional podcast producer.
Impressive.
I know.
Wow.
And one of the shows I work on is a really great show called Feeling Seen, and in it, we interview people like Doug Jones sometimes about a movie character that made them feel seen. It's a really, really good show. So I want to make sure people know that it exists.
So you would, for instance, like get a cat murderer on the show?
No, never. No. That would not be allowed.
Who would talk about how Doug Jones...
No, an actor who's played a cat murderer is welcome as long as they denounce cat murder, you know, in their hearts. You know, it's just an actor has to take on, you know, whatever role they're assigned. That's just the actor's lot, you know. And in this case, Doug Jones, he doesn't even talk about murdering or eating cats at all in the episode. Okay.
Perfect.
It's really sweet.
This is an odd pitch, but hear me out.
Okay.
I think the porn version of your show would be called Feeling Seen, S-E-A-N, and it would star a guy named Sean.
I think the porn version would be called Feeling Obscene.
Mm. Oh.
But obscene is spelled O-B-S-E-A-N.
Yeah. Then we could make it work. Yeah.
It stars a guy named Sean.
Yeah, take that back to the folks on the show.
It looks good on paper.
Everybody, please check out Feeling Seen. And where can people find you, Marissa?
I am, I guess I'm on Twitter at Flaxbart. Sorry, I'm just thinking about how what a poor advertisement for me and my what I'm putting out in the world. I do have a I have a Substack
there
that I put
go.
Out sometimes.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
called
let's
Metaphoria. Flaxbart.substack.com. Flaxbart spelled like a sound. My grandfather changed it so that it could be easy to spell, created a weird name in the process.
Oh, it's
that
great.
Nobody knows what it is, but it is phonetic. Flax.
It's all right there. There's nothing to figure out.
Nothing at all. Flaxbart.substack.com. Check those out.
That's lovely.
You know?
Everybody subscribe to Marissa's newsletter. All that remains is for me to say that this week we read a novel. The novel we read was called A Rogue of One's Own by Evie Dunmore. It's really fun. Everybody should read it. I had a good time with it. It's one of the best Regency novels I've read, and I like Regency novels.
Yay!
Next week we're going to be... Tanner, do you want to hash this out now? Or?
Ooh! Should we give Marissa a vote?
Yeah, I'll just pick three from the list. So Sarah is.
You know what? I'm not even gonna have a vote. I'm just gonna make Marissa choose.
Okay. So here's how this works.
This is amazing.
Sarah has painstakingly put together a list of rom-coms. It's
Thank
really
you, Sarah.
It's a very detailed spreadsheet. She got really into it. and I'm just gonna pick three, and you can say which one of the three we're going to.
I'm ready.
Watch. The first one is in keeping with our theme, the truth about cats and dogs.
Okay.
The second one, you know what? It's been a while since we did Gwyneth, so Sliding Doors.
Ooh. Ah.
And then finally, you know what? I'll just say it. Gross Point Blank.
Ooh.
Marissa, all right. What are we reading next
what
week?
An interesting trio of choices. I gotta go with that beautiful tie-in to the,
yes.
the In Memory of the Many Cats that we...
What's it called? It's Raining Cats and Dogs?
About Cats and Dogs.
Never heard
Garofalo.
Of it.
Janine Garofalo in that one. Yeah, come on.
Oh, wow.
Sarah, in her notes on this in the spreadsheet, has helpfully said, it's Janine Garofalo, Uma Thurman, and some kind of guy, probably.
Yeah, or so. A cat, or a dog.
That'll be fun. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, I will just tell everybody that my name this week has been Jack Alexander Shepard.
My name is Tanner Greenring.
I'm Marissa Flaxbart.
And I hope that you find your Cattily Ever After.
Fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Ballantyne's humane bug-catching wand was gently pinning the spider to the divan, which is a chair similar to a settee. He was almost close enough to crane up and bite, but she could smell the bug spray on him and could feel the heat of his urgency. She knew that the only thing that could stop him now is if she asked him to stop, which of course she couldn't do, because she was a spider, so the words did not come. With a chitinous purr, she slid her tarsi down the flat plane of his stomach, over the front of his trousers, but found him hard to enweb. He made his best effort at making his own chitinous purr in response before his weight came crashing down on top of her, crowding her back into the upholstery of the divan. It was a tussle. A heated tangling of pedipalps, patellae, tongues and toes, dragging off clothes and untying laces until fabric ripped and she wrenched away. She grasped at the sight of her tussle-ripped webs, torn like paper clean from her chelerae to her spinneret. She glared at Tristan chitinously. "Get a hold of yourself," she said chitinously. He gave her a thin smile. "This is my having a hold on myself." His hands spread out across ruined webbing, exposing millions of tiny baby spiders. His head lowered, and a rush of heat spread across her carapace. She let her mandibles fall back against the divan. There was no stopping either of them now. He was in the grip of something stronger and older than reason, fighting a spider. She offered no resistance when he shoved her ruined webs and gently picked up and humanely relocated her millions of spider babies. Note: it's important to clarify at this point that he's not attempting to have sex with the spider. She had taken a rogue into her web, into her life, so a mad lad tumble out onto the veranda was a befitting goodbye. "Let me stay tonight," she said, but he couldn't. Because you don't want to keep spiders in the house. And besides, he was allergic.